Hello, everyone. This is Milton Cornwell, COO of Copper Peak Logistics. Pleased to bring you another installment of our expert series. Today, I'm joined by Steve Randazzo, an old colleague of mine, who runs an experiential agency called ProMotion. For over 25 years, they have helped build brands through events, traveling roadshows, pop-ups, sampling programs, and a host of other programs and projects. They have worked with the likes of Anheuser-Busch, Gatorade, HP, Bosch, Campbell's, Disney, and many, many more. Steve is also an accomplished author, and his latest book, Brand Experiences, Building Connections in a Digitally Cluttered World, can be found on Amazon. So with this backdrop, let me introduce you to Steve.
Hey, Milton.
So Steve, you have so much experience in brand building and creating memorable experiences for these brands. Can you tell us how you got into this line of work and explain what is generally considered experiential marketing?
You know, how I got into it is probably a bit of a fluke. When I was in college, this vice president of public relations from the Kansas City Royals came to my school and spoke. And I went and met him afterwards. And I said, hey, I'd love a chance to understand what baseball PR is like in the major leagues. And he said, sure, come on up. That day when I met with him, I actually met the vice president of marketing for the Royals. And fast forward about 4 months later, after I graduated, I started there as a marketing assistant. And so my very first duties were things like first ball ceremonies, color guard ceremonies, giveaways at the ballpark, and anything that happened inside that park was an event. And so from my very first job out of college, I was doing events. So I think I got really lucky that I found something that I love and I'm pretty good at it. But I think it's probably the only thing that I'm really, really good at and the only thing that I really, really love. You know, I've been on the brand side. I've been on the agency side. I've been in privately held companies. I've been in big public companies. I still remember that day when I went into my wife and I said, hey, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to start an event company. And she's like, seriously? And I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. I was 31 years old. And I said, I'm ready. And we did. But back then, it was the event world. It was called an event marketing company. And now we're an experiential company. You know, I used to say all you need is a pickup truck and a ladder and you could join the event world. And now it's a lot more sophisticated than that. So in the last 25 years, the event world's grown up to experiences, experiential marketing term. It's good for the brands. It's good for the agencies. It's really good for the consumers or the customers on the receiving end of the experiences, because what we're doing today is so much better than what we were doing 25 years ago. You know, 25 years ago, we would just give somebody a sample and go, there it is. Isn't it great? And now there's so much more built into that experience.
It really is the epitome of taking national programs and really taking them all the way down to the local level for one-on-one interaction, isn't it? I mean, truly.
It is, for sure. And some of our programs aren't national. They're very regional or they're very local. Mm-hmm. It just depends of our customer happens to be, you know, the brand team. You know, we have a program that's going to launch in July of this year, and it's just in Houston. And they're like, we really want to go down to Houston. It's a great market for us. We're going to launch this new line of products and this new focus for our company. And we want to be down there for 12 weeks and we just want to be in Houston. And we're like, great, that's awesome. We'll go to Houston. And then other programs, you know, we talked to a client this morning, we're going to launch in June. And it's a fully national program and it's a B2B program, but it's going to, you know, go across the country, you know, 15,000 miles over probably 15, 16 weeks, engaging their customers. So it just depends what the needs of the customer happens to be. But everything centers around that, like you said, that one-on-one, everything comes down to that. You got one person normally talking to one or a few people talking about the brand, sampling the brand, building an experience around the brand, whatever it happens to be, to best get the brand the attention that it's looking for and to really cut through the clutter. There's so much clutter, unfortunately, coming out of COVID. The last 12 months, there's been more clutter in the marketplace than ever before. Once we get to early summer, I think those gates are going to open and people are going to run right through them. We're going back to the old normal. I think the new normal is going to be a thing of the past that people aren't going to talk about. We're all human. You know, we're going to go back and doing what we were doing before. And that's getting out and engaging and going to concerts and sporting events and fairs and festivals and things of that nature.
Is there one program that you all have been involved in that stands out among the others? Is there, do you have a favorite? Putting you on the spot here.
No, I get asked this a lot. We've done some really, really cool programs for Anheuser-Busch here in St. Louis. You know, we used to do a ton of sports marketing with them, NASCAR and PGA Tour and Senior Tour and all that stuff. And we do some really fun events. Disney, you know, who doesn't want to work with Disney? We've done some really cool programs for Disney, won a national award for one of them. It's like all those big companies are the ones that I guess stand out because, yeah, let's face it, they're bigger budgets. There's more wow to them. The ones that really excite me are the ones where we can provide an aha moment. We did a program with a company that had these incredible wheelchairs built for quadriplegic. These wheelchairs are unbelievable. They're like $25,000. First time we worked with them was a few years ago. And the first event I went to, there was one of their customers, a guy who was in an accident. And he told the story about the accident. And then he told the story of laying in bed for 5 years. And then he told the story that his doctor said, I want to introduce you to this wheelchair. And he was ready to commit suicide laying in bed because he couldn't move for 5 years. This wheelchair gave him life. And so if I tell you that, I get chills because we'd go out to doctors, you know, medical people and physical therapists and people like that. And we would put them in the wheelchair and they would have to interact with that wheelchair as if they were a quadriplegic. You talk about an aha moment. Those are the types of programs that I love because we can build to that. And then we create the and then people, they get it and they're really able to experience it. And it becomes an emotional connection, especially the fact that the quadriplegic is not able to get around. All of a sudden he or she is able to get around. That's just incredible. And that was, you know, that's a program that wasn't sexy, wasn't a huge budget, but just to see that aha moment happen is something I'll never forget. And, you know, it's one thing if you're sampling a liquid for someone to consume and yeah, you want them to have an aha moment, but you know, changing somebody's life, literally changing their life by putting their butt in this wheelchair is pretty cool. That aha moment is where we focus a lot of our energy. Even if it's a boring B2B program, we still go for that aha moment because that's what really breaks through the clutter.
Let me touch on your book because I love everything that's in there. But in your brand experiences, building connections, you say make a splash and go where the ducks are. Can you give us an explanation of what you mean by this and how wineries could potentially do this in such a saturated market? It's a perfect segue to what you were just talking about.
Yeah, it really is. So making a splash is all about cutting through the clutter. And it doesn't have to be a huge splash where you're spending millions of dollars. I know that's not feasible for probably a lot of your customers, but you don't need a lot of money to make a splash. And you don't need a lot of money to go where the ducks are. Making a splash could be as simple as showing up somewhere with your product, having a sampling experience that people just were like, oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know they were going to be here. Or maybe they did know you were going to be there, but you're showing up somewhere that they wouldn't normally think you would be. Or maybe you're out on a patio at a nearby restaurant. As part of that restaurant's meal, there's a flight of your product. So you get to sell your product, plus you get the sampling there. And that's where the go where the ducks are comes in too, because you want to go to places where your customers could be. Every brand out there has the same two needs. I don't care if you're a wine brand or a wine transportation and wholesaling company, or if you're, you know, an event marketing company, every single brand has two needs. They want to keep every customer they have and they want to get more customers. Mm-hmm. And it's as simple as that. So if you can go where your ducks are, where your consumers are, your customers are, and engage them, they like your product and now they're getting your newsletter or they sign up for your wine of the month. You're building an engagement. You're building a relationship. I think coming out of COVID, that's what more brands are going to do. And we're starting to see it. Even the last 2 weeks, you know, the first 2 weeks of March here, we're starting to see more and more brand activity. And I think the vaccines are kicking in and people are like, holy cow, I want to get out there before my customers do, or my competitors do. They're cranking to get out there. But if I was running a wine brand, I would be showing up where people don't expect me to show up. And I'd be showing up in places, obviously, where people who drink wine or would want to learn more about wine are going to be. You make a splash because they're like, oh, wow, I didn't know they were going to be here. And then you go where the ducks are because that's, you want to engage more ducks. Again, everybody's trying to keep your current customers, get them to buy more, and you want new customers to come in. What I love about products that you can sample and consume is if you've got a really great product, to get people over that risk of buying a brand new product and you get to that trial, it's so much easier to close if they like your product. We had a liquid company come to us 8 or 9 years ago, and they had a product that they sent us a bunch of samples, and we were like, ugh, if we go out and sample, they were awful. You go out and sample this product, you're going to kill your brand. You need to go back and improve it. If you have a good tasting product that people like, getting over that hurdle of trial, actual conversion, is so much easier. So I would be out engaging as many people who I know could be customers, so obviously over 21, they drink wine, they enjoy wine, but I'd be showing up in places that maybe they wouldn't expect me to be. I would definitely do the restaurants, as many places where I could get out in front and get people's attention and tell my story. I think that's so important.
Well, as you know, many of the wineries use their tasting room as a way to reach potential customers, but with COVID and fires, that's not nearly as successful as it used to be. And a lot of our wineries switched to virtual tastings, using technology to its fullest extent, more as a replacement, potentially now kind of here to stay, but certainly can't remain the only vehicle that they use. Do you have any recommendations on how brands can stay ahead and activate in markets versus passively waiting for visitors to come back as things open up? It's more of the offense, defense, and where do you use both of them?
Yeah, well, I love the idea of creating a virtual experience that people would pay for. You see a lot of this around food. So they're starting to do things together, creating experiences digitally. So they can all be together as they cook, or as they all go out and buy the same wines, or they go out and buy the same bourbons or whatever it happens to be. And they do their own tasting, or they're doing tasting with with somebody at the winery. So I think building that, I don't think virtual is going away. I think hybrid is going to be really the key for a while. So I think they have those wine tasting rooms and they build those experiences based on live engagements. I would be building, and hopefully they did before now, I would be building some type of digital experience that brings my brand to life and also provides the opportunity for people to consume my product. If you can get an email, if you can get people on your, Wine of the Month club, I would be really focusing on driving email engagement and gathering as many of the right email addresses as possible, because you want to continue to tell your story and get your story out to these people. You want them engaged with your brand. And I think that digital experience is something that's going to continue to live on. I know somebody in my office just hired a chef from Spain to put together this food experience for her brother's 40th birthday. So everybody in the family are going to be in different places that are all over the country. They're going to go out and buy the same ingredients. And then this chef in Spain is going to teach them all how to make this great meal. And then they'll all sit on Zoom and eat together because they can't be together. I would be doing the same thing. I would be building some type of experience that helps tell the story about my brand. And as there's so much clutter in the wine industry. There's so many brands today relative to 20 years ago. I think a lot of times those smaller batch wineries are more interesting to people. Camus is one of my favorites, but it's an expensive brand that we use for big occasions. There's a whole bunch of smaller brands that we love because we love their story. And that's what got us involved with that brand, is that brand story, fourth generation. And now there's so much heartbreak with the fires and COVID. So some of the story is going to be that resiliency, what we did to defend our turf and how we're coming out of bad fire season and the global pandemic, because our love for wine is so great.
Well, this kind of plays into the other thing I wanted to touch on. I know that you recommend to people steal the show in a very cluttered environment out there digitally. Can you give some examples of how people steal the show? It might be kind of combination of what you've already talked about, but yeah, I'd love to hear your perspective.
Yeah, I love that. The example I give is actually the Corona beer brand. They've done some amazing things that they didn't have to sponsor the big event, but they got their brand into the big event. And I know, some of the footwear companies have done the same thing. I think stealing the show there's an opportunity to steal the show. If you partner with a restaurant, they give you the opportunity to stand in front of everybody who's having dinner there and talk about your wines and talk about your story and have your products there to sample and to buy. I think that's a great opportunity for people who are going to dinner. Either they knew you were going to be there, you know, so they're there because of that, or they didn't know, but you get the opportunity to steal the show, to steal the memory, to gain that attention. Every brand is out there looking for more attention. Steal the show gives you an opportunity to take advantage of other people's consumers, other people's population. I would look for opportunities to partner with like brands or like industries where you can send your message through their emails in an effort to gain more attention, to have that opportunity to steal that show. You know, there's a lot of ways to get attention. It's not just through building live experiences. You can steal the show and, again, go where the ducks are, steal someone else's population. You're not actually stealing it, but you're utilizing it in a way to draw more attention to you and bring more business to you. Building that tribe for each brand is just so important. How do you find those like-minded people? Where are they? I can physically go to them, or I can go to them virtually or digitally. The more creative, the more strategic brands are going to do so much better. I know a lot of people have consumed a lot more alcohol because they've been home for the last 12 months. I don't think that's going to slow down. I think they're going to still be drinking wine and bourbon and beer and whatever else they're drinking, but they're going to go places to do it where we've been doing it at home. I'm tired of the bar at my house. I'm ready to go to somebody else's bar, enjoy life and have those types of experiences. So stealing the show is all about how do you multiply yourself and how do you show up again in places where people don't expect you and how do you put the spotlight on you?
Well, I think you're 100% correct. Everybody is tired of sitting at home. There's no question about that. And what relates to some of the smaller wineries, let's just face it. Historically, we've had relatively small marketing budgets. They're, you know, most of them aren't like the large conglomerates. Do you have any suggestions or ways that they can creatively make their limited marketing dollars stretch as far as they possibly can?
Yeah, and probably the most efficient, maybe not the most effective way to do that is some of the things we've been talking about with social media. It's so hard to stand out though, you know, from a social media standpoint. I would be looking for those small fairs and festivals around my area that I can utilize my staff and I can build some fairly inexpensive display. And I would take my products out and I would sample my products. And I would have the opportunity for them, you know, we're legal to buy on the spot also. Is it, you know, you want to get that impulse purchase. But I would utilize my own staff. I would, again, go to places that just totally make sense for you to be. There's, you know, there's wine festivals and things like that. There's a lot of competitors. If you go to a wine festival, I would probably, for a smaller brand with a smaller budget, I would recommend strategically not to go to the wine fest. You want to go somewhere you can stand out. If you're the only wine being sampled at a fair or festival, guess what? All the attention's on you and they're going to remember you. You know, it's sort of like when you go to a trade show, booth by booth to booth to booth is all kinds of stuff. And, you know, how do you stand out in that environment? I'd rather go somewhere where my competition is not, and then I can show and tell my story and have the opportunity to really stand out. And if you use your own staff, you really keep your costs down. I would try different places to figure out which type of place resonated the best for you. And then I'd go all in to one or two of those places. But I would test a lot of different things. Again, there's going to be, the gates are going to open and people are going to run through them and try and get back to normalcy as fast as possible. I would definitely be out there whenever the consumers are back out in public, enjoying music and being outside and things like that. I would definitely want to be there for that.
Well, okay. So speaking of the other side of the coin, for wineries that potentially are looking at reallocating marketing dollars and putting more into new programs, are there things that they could do, get involved with street teams and local ambassadors and pop-ups, you know, provided it's done safely and legally? There's some other approaches that wineries should be considering about taking it outside of the box and going local.
You know, there are a lot of compatible industries to wine. I think about cheese, I think about chocolate. I would be looking to partner with those compatible industries. in an effort to really be able to stretch your marketing budget. So you go in together and put together an experience that pairs your wine with something else. Obviously, it would not make sense to do it with a car company because, you know, people are going to get you for alcohol and automobiles. But there are a lot of other great industries and brands out there that it probably makes a lot more sense. There's so many brands that are in our industry that spend tons and tons of money. They all, you know, would like to have a bigger budget. If there's a brand that can come in that's compatible, that's not going to steal their thunder, but it's going to bring some money to the table. I've never been in a situation where we've brought that situation to one of our customers. They said, no, we just want to be the only game in town. They're like, sure, let's listen to see what they have. Let's see how much money they have and see what their ask is. You know, how much of our space are we going to have to give up? You know, how do we mesh it together so it makes sense for both of us? I think about Weber Grills. They do a ton of events, and wine and food on the grill make total sense. I can tell you tons of times in the last 12 months that I can't wait to run downstairs and grab a good bottle of wine out of the wine cellar because just prepared some really great fillets on the grill. So Weber may be a perfect place to go to create more bang for your buck and be able to hitch on to a much bigger budget and add value to a program like that.
That's great advice. I think we saw a little bit of that on a small scale with some of the virtual tastings where individuals were trying to pair certain types of cheese brands and things like that and make it all happen. And so in kind of the virtual world and making it all happen, they were definitely trying to do that. But it's interesting your perspective on things that are a little bit bigger budget, a little bit more in market, and being able to do that in a co-op form to spread the cost is just great. One of the last things I wanted to, you know, I've watched your business and how you've grown it over 25 years of being in business. Could you touch on a couple of the things that you find to be one or two key things, your recipe for success? Because I really love your company's approach.
We put our core values together probably 23 or 24 years ago. And they haven't changed not even one word in that time. And we're probably 2 or 3 years into it. And someone just kind of, I had a business coach back then. He was really digging into me like, you know, why is it so important that your employees are first? Back then, it was all customer first. And we were going a little bit against the grain. He really dug into it and really pushed. And I never really realized it, but I had an aha moment. And it came down to an experience that my dad had when he was in his career. And he got screwed by an employer. The employer lied to him. It was extremely hurtful. And it was a long-term plan that never happened. And so my dad left that company and went to a competitor. And 2 years later, he put that old company out of business. Most of his customers came with him. So I was probably 7 or 8 years old. And I remember my dad coming home and he was livid. And he was like, you know, that SOB, I can't believe he did that. He doesn't care about us. All he cares about is money. Emotional connection to that horrible thing that happened to my dad. And I was like, I never want to be that guy. You know, I know I can't do what we do by myself. And I always, you know, I always do this. I say, okay, we all reach out and we all hold hands. This is how big we can be. And this is the great work we can do. But if I'm just standing here by myself, well, first of all, it's not as much fun. I'm very collaborative. Second of all, you know, we can't do things. We can't have those experiences that we want to have. I can't because I don't have other people on my team. So the very first core value, yes, employees first, always, always will be. You know, I just think it's just really important. You know, and today it's so much more in vogue. Like I said, you can't have a company that's not focused on their employees. And I think people learned a lot about the culture of their organizations over the last 12 months. Has their company said, hey, I know you got little ones, stay home, take care of them, you can work from home? Or you got the other side that said, yeah, you can be home for 6 weeks, but now we're going to put this tracking software so I know when you're on your computer and when you're not, because I don't trust you. And that's a horrible thing. And I know both those things happen. I have friends who lived both of those. And boy, that, you know, thank goodness that I'm guessing vast majority, high 90% of companies out there are focused on people first. And that's their people, customer second. What I love about the customer second now is they focus on the customer experience. How does the customer interact with us from customer service all the way down, you know, the salesperson, the customer service person, the delivery person? I mean, everybody there has the opportunity to create an experience for their customer. employees first always is so important, and then building a really great customer experience is, you know, those are two pieces of, I think, successful businesses, at least here today in 2021, that are super important. You know, we have some other core values about making it happen. You know, we don't say no to anything. Customer comes to us and, hey, we're stuck. Can you help us with this? We always say yes, and then we figure it out. If we don't know how to do it, we'll figure it out. You know, we'll hire somebody else to help us. We'll do whatever we can because, you know, they're stuck. And that's why they ask. And they said, can you help us with this? Yeah, we'll help you solve it. We may not do all the heavy lifting, but we'll figure it out.
Well, it's obvious that you've built the culture that has built the team, the people buy into it. And that makes life just so much easier. And the work tends to be easier as well. So I admire everything that I can't thank you enough for taking the time today. And I'm sure our friends in the wine industry will have some great takeaways from your insights and your knowledge. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us, Steve.
Well, happy to do it, Milton. Anytime you need anything, just give me a call.